You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it.
I want to welcome you to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor, myself, DJ Ambush, and Dr. Bukasi Dubé. How are you this week, sir?
Man, I am doing well. Just hoping that people are staying out of the heat because it is hot.
Yes.
I mean, Portland is becoming incredibly hot.
Yeah.
So hoping that people are staying safe and staying cool out there. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on the same wavelength as you, trying to stay as cool as possible. I did not move out here from East Coast humidity to deal with triple digits. I was expecting triple digits in Portland. I am very, very encouraged by the city's response. They are giving out air conditioning units. I think they've given out around almost 800 units so far, which is close to 30% of what they anticipated giving out, but they're still doing it. And then there are, you know, there's the cooling centers that are available 24 hours. So we're going to make sure we put some of that information in the description as well. Got to stay hydrated, got to stay cool. A friend of mine, actually a colleague of mine that is from Arizona, when we were dealing with the record temperatures last year, I told her, I said, a friend of ours has a pool, and just the drive from work to that person's house was ridiculous. I said, I had all the windows down. And she said, well, why'd you put the windows down? I was like, so I could get some air moving in the car. She said, no, all of the air outside of the car, especially on that asphalt, is way hotter than what was probably in your car. I was like, oh. So I thought about that yesterday. I parked in the shade the night before. So when I got in the car was relatively cool. I kept all the windows up and just drove to work that way.
Good thinking, Ambush.
Who knew? Right. You know, hey. So there's a little tip for anyone out there that has an old school car like mine that doesn't have air conditioning.
You know, the other thing I think people forget about is just because humidity tends to be lower here when it gets hot, water is our friend. Not only to drink, but you can just like take a towel and get it wet and sluice yourself with it. And that brings your temperature down and it just makes you more comfortable and it makes you more resilient against heat illness.
Absolutely. So, yes, you've already heard his voice joining us this episode, Dr. Richard Lehman. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing okay. Thanks. Good to be back.
Good, good.
So thank you for joining us again. Thank you for joining us again. It's good to have you.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Dubé.
Absolutely. So this week, we're bringing back a topic that has been on the lips of everyone, monkeypox, known also as HMPXV. So we'll be doing a monkeypox update this episode. Last week, we did discuss the COVID-19 variants, the BA4 and the BA5. So we'll be discussing that as well. But can someone give us an update on what's going on with monkeypox?
I'll take a stab at it and let the expert jump in, Dr. Lehman. So I think the main reason why this is garnering so much attention is because case counts continue to go up, one. Two, and the World Health Organization declared this, you know, pandemic, right, Richard?
Well, not a pandemic, but a public health emergency.
A public health emergency, yes. So it's at the forefront of everybody's brains, and rightly so. So it's only appropriate that we talk about it. I hope that as we talk about it, we can talk about some of the things that are pertinent to why it was declared a public health emergency.
Sure.
So real quick, when we talked about it initially, I remember being very flustered and, you know, very, very worrisome about this. And it was, you know, coming off of the heels of the way the media has been covering COVID. So I was like, oh my God, this is the next big thing. Really got to worry about monkeypox. And I remember having a sense of relief at the end of that episode when we talked about how it's not as easily transmitted and you know, being able to actually visibly see it versus not being able to see if someone has COVID or not. But now it's a situation where we do need to have, you know, more conversation and more attention to it. So Dr. Lehman, what's changed? What's happening?
So we do have at this point in Oregon, as of this morning, 53 folks who have this infection, all of them male, and about a fourth of them are down in Lane County, down in the Emerald Empire, Eugene area. And then the rest are in the Metro Tri-County area. And I don't think it's too much of a surprise to us that we're seeing additional cases. We are continuing to see illness among certain groups of folks who are at higher risk. And as we talked about last time, this seems to be transmitted mainly, almost exclusively, by close, prolonged skin-to-skin contact, often in the situation of sexual activity. And it seems to be largely, at this point anyway, an infection that folks in certain social networks, and specifically men who have sex with men, seem to be the main folks who are getting this. In fact, just about exclusively in Oregon.
Interesting. Is this also a situation where, like, so how exactly is it transmitted? Is it through sweat? Is it through a secretion from the actual pox? Like, is this something where if I'm in a supermarket and I'm not paying attention and I come in skin-to-skin contact with someone while we're reaching for produce, like, how exactly is this transmitted?
So what we're seeing is that if people have a rash, they have the active bumps, the pox, and other people who don't have any, like gloves, are in contact with them, it's possible that that could happen, but it really does seem mainly to be through prolonged skin-to-skin contact, like somebody who's sick, who is spending a lot of time in close contact with somebody else. And usually that's been in the setting of sexual activity. So possible that if somebody's got these active lesions and somebody else touches them with their hand and puts their hand right on the active pox, could happen. There's been one or two cases reported where somebody's like taking care of somebody at home and they're changing dressings or something like that, and they get in contact with a bandage or blankets or something like that, that the weeping stuff from the lesions has gotten on. That's not happening often, but that's something we all want to watch out for, you know, if you're helping to take care of somebody who has this. Even less common than that, it may be that if somebody's got pox like in their mouth, which could happen, and they cough on you and you're within 6 feet of them and they nail you, maybe. But it really looks like you have to be in close contact, like for 3 hours or more within 6 feet in order to get it that way.
That is good to know.
I think it's important to highlight that this is primarily spread by skin-to-skin contact, right? It's primarily that prolonged skin-to-skin contact that Dr. Lehman is talking about. And of course, there have been these rare cases that have been described in literature of large droplet spread, but those are incredibly rare.
Yeah, actually, Bukosi, I was just reading an article that looked for cases among healthcare workers, and they looked at multiple outbreaks over multiple years. And back in 2016 or 2017, there was one case in a person who worked in a healthcare setting who got this, and they were changing the blankets of somebody who had active weeping lesions without wearing gloves. So that doesn't happen often in that situation. Still, we want to be careful, right?
And
So, in particular, if I think one important thing is if folks are potentially thinking of having having sexual relations with somebody who might be in one of these high risk groups, you talk to them first and you say, you know, hey, are you okay? Are you feeling well? Have you had any trouble with a rash or anything like that? And if they have a rash, maybe that's not the time to, you know, to engage in that activity. And that's a way that people can decrease their risk.
What are the symptoms? What are some of the symptoms? We do know the skin lesions, which are very visible. Right. What are some of the other symptoms of monkeypox?
So that's really the big one, Ambush. And like pretty much everybody who gets this has the rash, which often starts as kind of flat patches, and then it goes into developing these firm pox or bumps that then may fill with fluid or pus, and then they typically crust over, and then they fall off, and that usually takes about 2 to 4 weeks, that whole thing. Some people have what's called a prodrome. They have a fever. They have muscle aches. They have swollen lymph nodes and things like that. Interestingly enough, in this outbreak compared to earlier times, a lot of people don't have that, or they have it and it's pretty mild.
For those people that do have that version of it, can it present with just those symptoms and not the skin lesions, or is it always in conjunction?
Maybe for the first day or two, but typically the rash shows up within 1 to 3 days.
Okay. Okay. Now I'm going to go into a little bit of a gross area here. I, for one, when I get cuts, when I get mosquito bites, it's very, very difficult for me to keep my fingers off it. I'm always scratching it, you know, peeling it, putting some alcohol on it, like, so for someone that may be dealing with monkeypox, and of course they know what's going to eventually happen, you get that rash and then it raises, hardens, and then the lesions open. If someone were trying to rush that process, say like they start seeing it and they want to start poking at, like, does any of that help? Like, what's the worst, like, for those who just had that, you know, it's hard to keep your hands off it.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for our section of the community?
Yeah. So, Bukosi, I don't know if you want to chime in, but I don't think that's really going to speed the process particularly. And what that might do, though, is you get gunk on your hands. And then if you're not washing your hands and you, like, touch your eye, then you don't want to, like, put this stuff in your eye, right? So I think a good piece of advice is if somebody's got this, they should be, like, if it's on their arms, they should be wearing long sleeves. If they've got it on their legs, they should be wearing long pants. And that's going to decrease the likelihood. It can itch, but a lot of people have had trouble, like, particularly a lot of folks in this case, and again, this may be TMI, but a lot of the folks, a majority of the folks who've had this have had had pox that are on the genitals or in the perianal area, like around the rectum, and it can hurt because those are sensitive areas. So it can be very painful, unfortunately, not typically like life-threatening or anything, but still pretty darn painful. Nobody wants to get this.
So you bring up two very important things, right? It's you allude to two important things. One is, yes, it's very, very painful, but it's not, for the most part, not lethal. So it is not going to kill you for the most part. But there are things that can be done to help you deal with the symptoms that you're experiencing, the pain that you get from these lesions, or the itching. You can get medications from your provider to try and alleviate those symptoms.
Mm. Yeah.
Are there any over-the-counter, like anti-itch things that you guys recommend? Or even things to just help the, keep the area clean?
I think the main thing is just washing with soap and water and just keeping yourself clean. Like Dr. Lehman said, wearing long sleeved if you have active lesions will protect others from the individual that's experiencing this illness.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Dubé brought up an important point, and traditionally this particular strain of HMPXV in countries where this is endemic, and that's primarily in West Africa, the mortality rate, that is the percentage of people who might die from this, is like 1 out of 100. But that's often in areas that have a tough time providing healthcare quickly and providing supportive care for people. During this outbreak, out of like 3,600 folks in the United States who have had this during this recent outbreak, no deaths. Hmm. But it's not fun.
Yeah.
As far as the amount of time in which it's contagious, so before the lesions happen, is it possible for you to continue to spread it before that period? And then how long are you contagious after the lesions start healing up?
That's a great question, actually, Ambush. So, you know, digging around to try to find research on this, we can't find anything that shows that anybody has transmitted disease before they get symptoms. So it really does seem like you got to be symptomatic before you can transmit this. Yep. And the most likely time to transmit this is when you've got the actual pox, you know, the actual bumps. And so we think from onset of symptoms until the rash has healed and there's healthy skin underneath. And that typically takes about 2 to 4 weeks. Mm. So we're encouraging people who have this to watch out for others and to isolate themselves. And it's a different kind of isolation from COVID, right? But it's still, and as Bukosi and I were mentioning, if people can be wearing long sleeves, if they can be wearing long trousers, if they've got lesions on their legs, that's going to do a lot to help decrease the likelihood of other people coming in contact with the lesions.
Go ahead, Richard.
No, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say there's a running theme here, right, with that we've been talking about, which is, you know, you got to take care of yourself. And guess what? We also have a responsibility of taking care of the community, right? Doing all those protective things like wearing long sleeved, long pants, essentially, quote and unquote, isolate yourself, are protecting others and ensuring that this virus does not spread.
Yeah. So for someone that's listening and they think they may have some symptoms, what are the initial steps? How should they handle this? What are the first couple of things that they should be doing?
Well, I guess it's worth thinking about, might I have had an exposure, you know, might mm-hmm. I in the last 3 weeks or so have had had sexual relations with somebody who might possibly be infected with this. And mm-hmm. and at this point, it does seem like sexual contact between male to male, men who have sex with men, that seems to be the main way that this is spreading. So if somebody has had close skin-to-skin contact with somebody who's in a social network where this is circulating, and like that might be, you know, at a bathhouse, that might be at a bookstore with adult bookstore with places for people to have private contact. So thinking about those things, and then if you're really thinking, I think this might be the HMPXV, then talking to the doctor and saying, hey, this is what I think. This is why I think so. I'd like to get tested. And there is testing pretty broadly available now through a lot of different labs, including the state public health lab, but through other labs as well. So getting tested, I think, really makes sense. And just doing the things that Bukosi and I were just talking about in the meantime. If you think you might have it, don't give it to somebody else.
So the thing that we talked about last time that we haven't touched on just yet are vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I've been in clinic. I was in clinic 2 days ago, and I had a patient asking for monkeypox vaccine. I can share with you guys what I told the patient, but please, Dr. Lehman, share your expertise with us.
Sure. And there is a vaccine that's called Jynneos, and it is licensed and approved for prevention of HMPXV infection. And it's one of those neat vaccines that you can, even if somebody's already been exposed, if they get the vaccine quickly enough, it can actually help prevent infection or make it so that the infection is less severe. So public health is working with folks who have these infections to figure out who they may have been in contact with, talking with those folks. And if they had what seems to be a high risk exposure, like prolonged skin to skin contact, offering them the vaccine so that they can either prevent infection or limit it.
Is this is this a newly developed vaccine, or is this something that's readily available right now?
Very good question.
And this one's been around for a while, but there hasn't been, interestingly enough, you know, you would hope that they would have made more of it than they have, but they have, the company that makes it, and it's only one company because it's still under patent and everything, but it's been around for a while. They're gearing up in production at this point. Oregon has maybe about 1,800 additional doses that we haven't deployed out to local public health. Local public health is already using this in order to protect people who have had high risk contact with somebody who has the infection. But we're also looking, if there are other people who, based on their risk, are at a higher risk for this infection. For instance, if folks in the last 2 weeks have had multiple partners, multiple sexual partners who may have been infected, who are in a social network where this is circulating, then that might be a reason to get vaccinated as well. And we don't have enough vaccine to cover all folks who might be in that situation, but we are working hard and pushing CDC to get additional vaccine so that we can broaden that availability. Bukosi, I'd be interested. What did you say?
So I reassured the individual and that one, they were not high risk based on what they had shared with me, and two, that they did not need to get vaccinated for this.
Sure.
And they had a lot of questions. I answered all their questions, and I believe they were satisfied with the response.
Yeah, it's a great point that this is not a vaccine that, like, oh my gosh, let's open up a big thing at the convention center and get a whole mess of people vaccinated. It's not everybody needs this vaccine. You don't have to bring your kids in and get them all vaccinated at this point. And really, what we're trying to do is to provide the vaccine to the people who truly are at risk. And so that's the strategy.
So before we close out, I remember there were different characteristics that put you in high risk groups, depending, you know, when we were talking about COVID all this time. So someone who may be immunocompromised, would they be considered within a high risk group for this, particularly because we're talking about something that causes skin lesions? And when you have open lesions, you are open to infection. So is someone who's immunocompromised, would they be considered high risk? And should they be asking about or trying to obtain the vaccine?
Man, you knocked it out of the ballpark. That's a very good question. So there's a two prong answer. I'll take the first one, and I'll let Dr. Lehman take the second one. The first one is I'll talk about treatments, right? What's available out there, and are people getting those treatments? Yes, there are therapies that are out there that have been used in folks. For the most part, this is treated via supportive, what we call supportive therapy, meaning, you know, encouraging folks to stay clean, to wash, using antiseptic cleansing if they need to.
Pain control.
And if you have fevers, taking antipyretics like Tylenol, ibuprofen, etc. But there are medications that are indicated in folks that have severely immunocompromised, like you bring up DJ Ambush, and folks who have very, very severe disease. There was a case report, I don't remember which journal it was, that came out recently about a young man who ended up getting, I believe, tecovirimat, which is one of the antiretrovirals. Yep.
That's the main one that's getting used.
Dr. Yes. Yeah. I read this case, I believe last week when I was preparing for this, because we thought we were going to talk about monkeypox update last week, and then we had to push it to today. But anyway, so I remember reading this case report and thinking, whoa, people need to know that, yes, if they have severe illness or if they're immunocompromised, they need to be aware that there are medications available out there. But I want to go back to the second part of the question, which is folks who have, who, like you pointed out, who may be immunocompromised, should they get vaccinated? Dr. Lehman.
Yeah, and I would say that just being immunocompromised is probably not in and of itself an indication for vaccination. But if somebody's immunocompromised and they might, you know, be at higher risk of exposure to HMPXV, you bet.
Okay.
You bet. And so that would be somebody who would fall into this group of folks who might be at increased risk for getting the infection. I wanted to follow up on what Dr. Duhay said. The indications for use of this medication, tecovirimat or TPOX, as some people are calling it, are people who have really severe disease requiring hospitalization. And fortunately, that's been a pretty small number of people, nobody to this point in Oregon, but a small number of people in the U.S. who've had this infection. And primarily that's been because of severe pain and because they just couldn't get good control of the pain. That's the main reason that folks have been hospitalized for this so far, to get them through that that period. And so that's one indication for this. The others are, as Dr. Dubé said, if somebody is immunocompromised and they've got the infection, they're at higher risk for severe disease. So that's a good candidate for getting treatment, this antiviral treatment. Also, kids who are less than the age of 8, if there are any, they seem to have more severe disease, and so they would be good candidates. And then if somebody is pregnant, a person who's pregnant, we think that there's an increased risk there, and so they would be a reasonable candidate for treatment.
You read my mind. That was the very last question I was going to ask.
Oh, how about that?
you reached right into it and pulled it out. Okay, excellent, excellent. This has been very, very informative, extremely informative. Thank you both so much. We will have additional information in the description, as well as some of the things I mentioned earlier as far as information on cooling centers and how to beat the heat. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will catch you in the next episode.
Stay safe.
So good to get a chance to, so good to get a chance to talk to you guys again.
Definitely. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.